From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Democratic Party leaders and President Donald Trump are both claiming victory in reaching an agreement on the new version of NAFTA, the USMCA, or the United States-Mexico-Canada Trade Agreement. On the same day that lawmakers announced two articles of impeachment against President Trump, they announced the USMCA deal, in part to claim that they could legislate at the same time as impeach. Trump, at a political rally in Hershey, Pennsylvania on Tuesday night, claimed that Democrats made the agreement in order to offset the embarrassment they felt about impeaching. But what is in the actual agreement? Is it better for workers, the environment, and consumers than NAFTA? Or does it benefit corporations like most trade agreements have? My guest is Robert E. Scott, senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute. Welcome to the program, Rob.
Thank you for having me.
So first, explain the actual NAFTA agreement, the North America Free Trade Agreement, signed by Bill Clinton, and that has been, you know, maligned by liberals and conservatives, and in recent years, particularly by President Trump, who called it the worst trade deal ever. In your brief summation, how would you explain what NAFTA actually achieved and why it was actually a terrible agreement?
Well, trade investment deals like NAFTA, and NAFTA was actually the template for many others. These agreements are essentially designed to create rules to allow multinational corporations to invest abroad. And the target for that investment has largely been in Mexico. What the deal resulted in was the closure of thousands of factories in the United States and the loss of nearly 700,000 U.S. jobs alone, most of them in manufacturing. But beyond that, it began a process of driving down the wages for not just manufacturing workers, but everybody who looks similar, essentially everybody without a college degree. And in the United States, that's close to 100 million workers who've seen downward pressure on their wages as a result of trade with Mexico, increased trade with low-wage countries like China. So it's really been a globalization process kicked off by NAFTA.
Now, the USMCA has been touted as a completely different deal, you know, hence the new name. But of course, it's more likely that Trump simply rebranded it because that way he could put a stamp on it. How different is it really from NAFTA? Trump called it, you know, the best trade deal, the best and most important trade deal ever made by the USA. Is it?
Absolutely not. No, this is a Band-Aid on a bad agreement. It's a series of patches, but essentially 85, 90, even 95% of the core NAFTA agreement will remain in place. Wow. What they've done is graft onto that agreement some updates for improved labor rights and environmental standards for enforcement of those claims. And at the same time, they also gave multinationals a lot of what they wanted as well, increased protection for intellectual property rights, digital trade, and those sorts of things. That's going to result in increased profits for companies like Microsoft and Amazon. So it's kind of win-win, but the wins for workers are very small and marginal at best.
Now, Democrats are also claiming this agreement is amazing. They had claimed that they held up the agreement and held up negotiations in order to win better labor protections. And it wasn't until AFL-CIO head Richard Trumka signed off that Democrats decided it was at that point good enough. I want to play for you and our audience a clip of House Ways and Means Chair, Committee Chair Richard Neal, of course, a Democrat, lauding the trade deal, at least the version that Democrats and the White House have agreed to. Here is Richard Neal on Tuesday morning.
This is a transformative agreement. It's a template, I believe, for future agreements. Our constant emphasis was on enforceability, enforceability, enforceability. We fixed that. And the idea and the notion that the president of the AFL-CIO, Rich Trumka, would be supportive of this initiative, I think, tells the story. But this is more than a triumph for organized labor. It's a triumph for workers everywhere across America. In terms of the working group members, I want to say that they strengthened the labor standards, they strengthened the environmental chapters, they enhanced the verification mechanisms for environmental trade. With the unflinching leadership of the Speaker, we also secured important changes in USMCA that preserve Congress's ability to change U.S. law to address the crisis we are facing with respect to high prescription drug prices. Over the intense period of these negotiations with the administration, I repeatedly emphasized that USMCA will deserve a vote because it's an agreement that Democrats shape.
And that is Richard Neal, Democratic representative and chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, who announced this agreement with the White House, something he called transformative and a triumph, and is proudly claiming that Democrats have shaped the USMCA. And of course, there are next steps. It doesn't mean it's a done deal, which we'll get to. But my guest, Robert E. Scott, with the Economic Policy Institute, your organization, calls this document, this agreement, weak tea. Why do Democrats consider it transformative? A triumph for organized labor and workers everywhere in America, said Mr. Neal.
Well, I think there's a tension in the Democratic Party, frankly, between the Wall Street wing of the party, which is really represented by people like Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and the progressives who have increasingly come to be critical of globalization deals like NAFTA and the Korea Free Trade Agreement, the proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership that was ultimately pulled back by President Trump. But I think the issue is that once Trump announced that he was going to enter into bargaining to revise NAFTA. He decided to offer labor unions and other and environmentalists and consumer groups the opportunity to participate in the negotiations, and they had to decide whether they were or were not going to be in the room. And given that, they sought to obtain as much as they could. Frankly, the concessions made are not going to have a big impact on jobs in the U.S. At most, we'll gain about 50,000 jobs in manufacturing, and even that is up to debate. That's due to a study from the U.S. International Trade Commission. The International Monetary Fund, on the other hand, has predicted that the U.S. will actually lose jobs as a result of the agreement. So it's a lot of uncertainty there. The provisions are very detailed, and it's going to take a long time before they take effect and we see how they affect trade in industries like automobiles and parts. That's a key focus in this agreement. One clear gain, however, is that labor rights will be increased in Mexico. That could be good for Mexican workers. We could see increased wages and an end to abuse of labor union leaders in that country. That's good for workers in Mexico. But even the U.S. government's own study showed that it will have essentially zero impact on wages in the United States. So this is not going to fix the negative impacts of NAFTA. It's not going to claw back the 700,000 jobs lost. It's not going to reverse the downward pressure on the wages of working Americans.
What about the prescription drug prices aspect of USMCA that Richard Neal also referred to?
Well, the U.S. Prescription drug industry, let me say that again, Big Pharma has been lobbying for years to increase copyrights and, in particular, special protection for what are known as biologics, these custom-designed drugs that can cost $30,000, $100,000 a year for an individual prescription for one consumer. This is driven in part by special protection for the patents and copyrights of these drugs. And these companies negotiated an expansion of their special protections as part of Trump's negotiation of the USMCA. Those were widely condemned by Congress and by consumers and by labor unions. And they forced Trump to walk back some of those increased protections, especially for the biologics. There still are increases in some patents and copyrights. It's going to result in higher profits for pharmaceutical makers and downward pressure on wages. So it's not a complete win. For workers and consumers, but it's less bad than it would have been under Trump.
The biologics are this new class of drugs that are developed from living organic molecules, so it's sort of a special kind of drugs. And I understand that essentially they wanted a 10-year copyright that would prevent the production of generic versions of these. So at least sort of in a narrow way now that copyright demand has been done away with?
Yes, and furthermore, what the agreement would have done was prevent Congress from weakening that standard, from, say, reducing the protection for the biologics from 10 years to 7 years, as has been proposed in Congress. If we had allowed this provision as it was written by Trump to remain in the agreement, it would have tied Congress's hands. And that's part of the problem with these trade deals. They've been used to deregulate the global economy and to create all these special protections for multinational companies.
The auto industry is specifically mentioned in this agreement. I understand that the goal was to have more parts, more auto parts, car parts made in the United States. And of course, the auto industry in the U.S. has been flagging and struggling. And does this, and it would increase the percentage of components from 62.5% to 75%, which may sound like a lot, but maybe it's not. Will the auto industry get a big boost from this?
I think that's one of the great unknowns. The rules would require that more of the parts be made in North America in order to qualify for special zero tariff duties on trade in autos within the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. But the question is whether or not auto companies are going to continue to build their cars in North America. They could decide simply that it's more costly to simply abide by these new rules. They could simply offshore production to countries like Malaysia or Vietnam or China. So we could end up actually importing more vehicles and building fewer of them here.
Wage standard built into the auto industry provision as well for workers needing to earn at least $16 an hour for a certain percentage of the car?
Yes, there are actually two new standards. One you referred to a moment ago, the so-called rules of origin, that will raise the content built in North America for cars getting the special NAFTA exemption on tariffs. But the second part is this new $16 an hour wage standard would have to apply to 40 or 45% of the parts that are used in building these vehicles. Again, there's a real question as to whether or not companies are going to be willing to pay those wages, or whether it's just cheaper for them to move all of production abroad and pay the relatively low tariff on importing cars, which is about, I think, 2.5%. So there's very little incentive to actually pay those wages within North America.
Mexican workers may be benefiting, and you alluded to this earlier. The claim is that the USMCA will make it easier for workers in Mexico to unionize. Again, I suppose this is one of those provisions whose outcomes we'll just have to wait and see?
Yes, I think it is. There's no question. Mexico has been a very difficult place to organize and bargain collectively. There have been dozens of labor leaders killed. There's a tradition in Mexico of having so-called company unions, where workers don't even know that they belong to a union. The union leader might be the cousin of the boss of a plant. And they negotiate labor contracts that are very favorable to the companies that really don't benefit the workers at all. So this has been the culture in Mexico. The new president of Mexico is very pro-labor, President López Obrador. He has come in, and he and the progressives that were elected with him have voted in new labor law. They wanted to do this. I think the USMCA negotiations were simply encouraged a process that was already underway. But there's the U.S. labor unions have asked And we're insisting that they have the ability to inspect factories in Mexico and to impose penalties on goods coming in that were not made according to the standards in the new agreement. And that's been very controversial in Mexico. And even today, we don't know what is exactly in the terms of the deal that was negotiated and signed Tuesday in Mexico City.
Right. There's an issue of Mexican sovereignty, if you will, in allowing outside inspectors. So we've talked about the U.S., we've talked about Mexico. What about Canada? I know that Canadian interests were particularly centered on the dairy industry there. So what does this new agreement or this new version of NAFTA say about Canada's dairy industry?
Well, the United States has been touting these reduced tariffs on dairy and egg and eggs and so forth. They again, according to the U.S. International Trade Commission, they may lead to slight increases in U.S. exports of these commodities to Canada. So, from the point of view of Canadian farmers, this is a bad thing. However, this is just essentially the same deal that the U.S. and Canada had agreed to under the terms of the proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership. So once again, the TPP is working its way into U.S. Trade treaties through the back door. And we see that happening here. It was also happening with the pharmaceuticals and the digital trade provisions I referred to earlier.
What's the next step for the USMCA on the same day that the agreement was announced? The lead negotiator for the U.S., Robert Lighthizer, traveled with Jared Kushner to Mexico. What did they do and what needs to happen for this to become reality?
Well, I believe they, again, on Tuesday, they signed the agreement with the trade minister from Mexico and Canada. The next step is that the agreement has to be translated into the three languages, the English, Spanish, and French. And then the agreement has to be translated into so-called enabling legislation, which will codify the changes that were made to the NAFTA agreement. And that legislation is allegedly, reportedly, they're going to try and force that through Congress next week. That's a tremendous amount
next
of work to
week?
Get done next week before Christmas.
Okay.
It's a tremendous amount of work to get done in less than 2 weeks.
So they are trying to push this through. Are you surprised that the Democrats have been able to come to this agreement with the White House? Or is this just Democrats being Democrats? Because they, it was Bill Clinton who signed the original NAFTA. This is not like NAFTA and the trade agreements that have been spawned in its image have been a conservative or Republican project.
Frankly, I think it's a different process. In this case, Trump was desperate to have yet another press release, something that he could have to burnish his reputation. It's not coincidental that this deal was come to on the same day that we began consideration of impeachment articles in the U.S. Congress. All this happened on Tuesday of this week. I think this gives Trump something else to campaign on. So he desperately needs this. And as a result, the labor unions and environmental and consumer groups were able to use that as leverage to extract more concessions. Concessions I don't think they would have ever gotten from Bill Clinton in the original NAFTA negotiations or from President Obama, for that matter.
If you could have shaped a trade deal emphasizing labor, emphasizing the environment and consumers, would you have hoped for a better version than what Democrats and Republicans got?
Frankly, in my view, we should stop negotiating new trade and investment deals. Globalization has done tremendous damage to workers in the United States. We need to put in place policies that will rebalance global trade and rebuild the domestic economy. We need to invest in worker training. We need to create a robust safety net for workers who've lost their jobs, not just due to trade, but for any reason. This is the kind of policies that have been very effective in Germany and elsewhere in Northern Europe has created a very high wage, very low unemployment society with high levels of social welfare. I think this is the direction we need to move in. I think workers need to have that kind of security before we can talk about moving ahead in a new direction and designing rules for the global economy. When we do that, I think we do need to focus on things like labor standards, enhancing labor standards, but also on coming to global agreements on issues like ending climate change and eliminating corporate evasion of taxes. I think these are the kinds of issues that we could address in new global agreements, but I think we have to tend to our own domestic agenda first.
Do you hold organized labor as complicit in this particular trade deal? I mean, Richard Trumka signed off on this, and organized labor has generally thrown in their lot with the Democratic Party instead of holding that party's feet to the fire.
Well, I think we live in the real world in Washington of what can be accomplished in this Congress at the margins, and I think that's the world that the AFL-CIO and Richard Trumka work in. And every day it's a battle to try and obtain a better deal from Washington for the working people that the AFL-CIO represents. This is a very controversial agreement. The AFL-CIO has come out in favor of the USMCA. Other unions like the machinist unions have announced their opposition. So this is a very much on the edge decision, and I think it depends on the view of individual unions as to the relative merits of the gains that they got, I think, which are going to most importantly benefit Mexican workers, which are important to the labor movement. Solidarity is important I think, most unions in the United States. That is, international solidarity is important to most unions in the United States. But on the other hand, I think they don't want to take steps that would give President Trump something else to campaign on. So I think that's part of the tension.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website for the Economic Policy Institute.
Yes, it's epi.org.
Great. We'll link to that from our site. Thank you so much, Rob.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
My guest has been Robert Scott, senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute. We've been discussing the USMCA. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.